Part 4. Friday. Root causes, Lambert was saying. You all kept mocking me for talking about them, and now look where we are. Another colony planet, another uprising. Except this time the planet's already declared independence. The shuttle rocked on the way through Khartoum's atmosphere. This time it was not only the four of us, but my entire platoon, as it was on Russ. We weren't doing protest suppression this time. This time we were making a surgical strike on Khartoum's prime minister, who had declared the planet independent, encouraged mobs to occupy colonial union buildings, and then hidden himself, with a circle of advisors, in an undisclosed location, presumably because he knew that the colonial union wasn't going to be particularly happy with him. Indeed, it wasn't. It wasn't happy with him, or in fact any of his party's leadership, all of which had endorsed the independence, without, it should be noted, actually presenting it to the entire parliament for ratification.
They learned from Franklin, Lambert continued. This time they knew not to give us a chance to respond first.
Which makes their independence illegal, Salcido noted.
He was sitting next to Lambert.
It was always going to be illegal, Lambert said. By which I mean there was no possible way the colonial union would accept the legality of their independence, so there was no reason for them to put it up to a vote.
But now it's also illegal by their own system of government.
No, because the Prime Minister had his cabinet approve a declaration of emergency powers and dissolved the current government, Lambert said. As legal as can be.
For what little good it's going to do him, Powell said. She was down a bit from Lambert and Salcido, on the other side of the shuttle, as was I.
Oh, now, Ilsa, he'll be fine, Salcido said. He's in an undisclosed location.
Which we are on our way to right now. Another high-altitude drop and destroy. We need to get Prime Minister Okada alive, I reminded Powell. High-altitude drop, snatch, and then destroy, Powell corrected.
Which begs the question of how we know where this undisclosed location is, Lambert said to me.
Okada's had nanotransmitters in his blood since he became Prime Minister, I said.
I assume he doesn't know that.
Probably not.
How did they get there, if you don't mind me asking?
No idea, I said. If I had to guess, I imagine at some point or another he had a meal at the Colonial Union compound, and they were slipped to him then.
And we wonder why the Colonial Union isn't looked on with great enthusiasm, Lambert said.
Powell rolled her eyes.
Here we go.
You can snark at me all you want, Ilsa,
Lambert said, and then disappeared as a hole in the shuttle appeared behind him, and he was sucked out into Khartoum's upper atmosphere, along with Salcido and the soldiers on either side of them. My combat suit, sensing pressure drop and shuttle damage, immediately snuck its mask over my head and started drawing oxygen out of what remained of the air in the shuttle cabin. Simultaneously, as platoon leader, I was patched into the shuttle's systems, which told me what I already knew. The shuttle had been hit, and was no longer in full control of its descent. I fought down the urge to panic and focused on damage assessment. The pilot was trying to keep the shuttle from tumbling, fighting with the now damaged controls. Four soldiers out the growing hole in the side of the shuttle. Five others dead or mortally injured. Another five seriously injured but alive. 15 uninjured, and me. The shuttle was declaring it was being attacked. Whoever hit us wasn't done. I connected to the shuttle and authorized the shuttle doors to open. Everybody out now, I said, through the platoon BrainPal feed. My simulated voice made me sound more calm than I was. We were all already suited up to jump out of the shuttle. We were just doing it earlier now. By fire teams, let's go. The remainder of the platoon started out the doors. Powell stayed back with me, yelling at stragglers. The pilot kept the shuttle steady as possible. Powell and I got out of the door just before some sort of kinetic round tore the shuttle apart. I did a quick ping on the pilot's uniform system feed. There was nothing there.
Lieutenant, Powell sent.
She was falling about 100 meters away from me and sent to me via tight beam.
Look down.
I looked down and saw flickering beams shooting up into the evening sky. They weren't going all the way up into the atmosphere. They were terminating on points below me. They were hitting my soldiers, killing them. "Full camo chaos dive," I sent over the platoon channel, to everyone still alive. Then I ordered my suit to seal me in, went dark on communication, and made myself as close to a hole in the atmosphere as I could. The suit's camo function would hide me visually, and would do what it could to scatter any electromagnetic waves that would be sweeping over me, trying to bounce back to a receiver set on targeting me. My suit was also making subtle movements, and sending out extensions to move me around randomly, changing my speed and direction of descent, almost making it harder to target me. Every platoon member who heard my order was now doing the same. Chaos diving could kill an unmodified human with the jerks and turns. My suit stiffened up at the neck and other joints to minimize the potential injury. It didn't mean I didn't feel my insides strain, but it wasn't meant to be comfortable. It was meant to keep you alive. One other thing. The electromagnetic scattering camouflage effectively makes you blind. You fall, relying on the data your suit pulled before you turned it on to allow it to track where you were and how far you had fallen, factoring in all the shifts in direction and descent speed, and feeding that into your brain pal. The camo was designed to give me a visual feed again one click up, just enough time to assess and plan a final descent path. Unless there was an error, in which case I would see the ground just before I smacked straight into it. Or I might never see the ground at all. There would just be a sudden thump. Also, I wouldn't know if one of those beams had found me until it started frying me. The point is that you don't do a full camo chaos dive unless you absolutely have to. But that's where we were at the moment. Me and every other soldier in the platoon. It also meant that when we landed, we would be scattered all across the countryside, comms quiet to avoid detection. In our briefing, I had given the platoon an alternative extraction point in case something went wrong, but having the shuttle shot out from under us so far up, and then performing a chaos dive meant that the remainder of the platoon was likely to be scattered over an area 100 clicks to a side. When we landed, we were going to be alone, and hunted. I had several minutes to contemplate all of this as I fell. I also had several minutes to think about what had happened. Simply put, there should have been no way for the shuttle to have been shot out of Khartoum's upper atmosphere. Khartoum had defenses like any colonial Union planet would to prevent alien species from attempting an attack. But as they had been on Franklin and every other planet we'd visited recently, these defenses were built and run by the colonial Union itself. Even if these installations had been overrun by Khartoum citizens and abandoned by their CU operators, anyone trying to operate them would have been locked out by a nested set of security measures. Unless the CU operators had gone over to the other side, possible but not likely, those were someone else's beams. Another wrinkle. The Turbingen should have been tracking the shuttle's descent and alerting us to and defending us from any ground-based attacks. If it hadn't, it would have been because it was otherwise occupied. Which is to say that it was being attacked, either from the surface of the planet or above it. In either case, also not from the colonial Union. If this was correct, then it meant a couple of things. It meant that whatever was happening on Khartoum, it wasn't just about the planet's independence. The planet had aligned itself with enemies of the colonial Union. And then it laid a trap for us. Not for the Turbingen itself. Whoever was doing this didn't know which among the colonial defense forces' ships were going to respond. Whoever was doing this didn't know which among the colonial dense forces' ships were going to respond. The Turbingen, its shuttle, and my platoon were all incidental in this. No, the trap was for the colonial Union itself. But why? And for what purpose? My visual feed kicked on, and I was a click above the ground. In the distance were lights, which suggested some form of civilization. Directly below me was dark, hilly, and full of vegetation. I waited as long as possible and deployed braking nanobots, which spread out widely to catch the air. I landed hard and rolled, and then stayed on my back for a moment, catching my breath and looking up at the sky. It was local night, and the darkness of the vegetation combined with my colonial Union-designed eyes meant I could see the stars in all their local constellations. I sighted several, and with local time and date, calculated my position. I checked with my brain pal to see if there was any signal from the Turbigen. I didn't want to try to signal them in case anyone was listening, but if they were sending to us, they might have information we survivors could use. Nothing. That wasn't good. I stood up, visual camo still on, and walked to where I could again see the lights in the distance. I applied the visual to the data for ground maps I had in my brain pal for the mission. I checked that against the position of the stars in the sky. I was in the foothills above the suburbs of Om Dhurman, Khartoum's capital city. I was 45 clicks southeast of the city's capital district, 38 clicks south of the undisclosed location where I knew the Prime Minister to be, and 23 clicks southwest of the secondary extraction point where I hoped any survivors of my platoon were now heading. I wasn't interested in any of those at the moment. Instead, I called up my visual cache of the last hour and tracked back to a visual of one of the beams targeting a soldier of mine and started using the visual information, along with my descent data, to track back the location of whatever was creating that beam. 16 clicks due almost directly north, also in the foothills, near an abandoned reservoir. "Got you," I said. Bumped up my low-light visual acuity as much as possible to avoid falling into a hole, and started jogging toward the target. As I did, I had my brain pal play me music, so I would be distracted from thinking about Lambert or Salcedo or Powell or any other members of my platoon. I would think about them later. I would grieve them later. Right now, I needed to find out who shot them down. 6 clicks from the target, something knocked me off my feet and threw me to the ground. I immediately pushed off and rolled, confused because I had my visual camo on, and because whatever hit me and tossed me to the ground was nowhere to be seen. I had been shoved by a ghost. "Lieutenant?" It took me a second to realize that the voice I heard was through my brain pal, not my ears.
"Directly in front of you," the voice said. "Tight beam me. I don't know if we are still being tracked."
"Powell?" I said via tight beam, incredulous.
"Yes," she said.
She sent me visual permissions on her suit, which allowed my brain pal to model where her body would be. She was indeed a meter directly in front of me. I tight beamed her similar permissions.
"Sorry about tackling you," she said.
"How did you do that?" I asked. "I mean, how did you know that I was there?"
"Are you listening to music?"
"I was," I said. "So?"
"You were singing as you ran."
"Jesus," I said.
"You didn't know?"
"No, but I'm not surprised. When I was a musician, they had to turn off my microphone at gigs because I would sing along. I can play any stringed instrument you can name, but I can't sing worth a damn."
"I noticed that much,"
Powell said, and I smiled despite myself. Powell motioned back to the southeast.
"I came down that direction and started heading this way and began hearing you a couple of clicks back. I waited until I was sure it was you."
"You could have tight-beamed me instead of tackling me."
"It seemed safer this way. If you were on the ground, there was less chance of you grabbing your MP and spraying the brush out of surprise."
"Point. Why are you headed this way, though? The secondary extraction point is not this way."
"No, but the assholes who shot us down are."
I smiled again. "It does not at all surprise me to hear you say that."
"Of course it doesn't. Just as I'm not surprised to find you on the way there."
"No, I suppose not."
"Shall we go?"
"Yes," I said. We both stood up.
"Just to be clear, I plan to kill the shit out of every single one of them we find," Powell said.
"We may want one or two for questioning," I said.
"Your call. You better point out which ones you want ahead of time."
"I will."
"And Ilsa?"
"Yes, Lieutenant."
"What was your job back on Earth? I've always been curious."
"I taught 8th grade math in Tallahassee."
"Huh," I said. "That's not what I expected."
"Are you kidding?" Powell said back. "You try teaching algebra to a bunch of little shitheads for 38 years straight. The way I figure it, I've got about another decade before my rage from that gets entirely burned up."
"Whatever works."
"Ready?" "Yes, I am." Powell said. I've got some anger to work out, and not just from teaching.
Well, this is definitely not good, Powell said to me. The two of us, still in full camo, lay 200 meters out from a large concrete slab, itself on the edge of a disused reservoir. On the slab were 2 missile launchers, an electromagnetic mass driver, and 2 beam weapons. One of the launchers was missing 2 of its missiles, and next to it, 2 specialists had hauled over new weapons to load onto it. The specialists were not human.
Fucking array, Powell said, naming the species. What are they doing here?
Shooting down our shuttles, I said.
But why? How did they even get onto this planet?
I think they were invited.
By the Prime Minister? I'm going to shoot him twice now.
We still need to bring him in alive, I said.
I didn't say I was going to kill him, Powell replied. Just that I was going to shoot him twice.
Let's focus on what we are doing here first.
All right, Powell said. How do you want to do this?
I looked again at the slab. Each of the weapon platforms had its own set of technicians and operators, which amounted to 4 array each. Each of the platforms also had its own power source, the largest being attached to the mass driver, which had to pull some serious energy into its electromagnets. The platforms were spaced haphazardly, as if they were hastily installed and meant to be equally hastily removed. And, indeed, toward the back of the platform were a set of trucks large enough to pack up the platforms and drive them away. There was a 5th truck as well, smaller than the rest, out of the top of which sprouted various communications receivers. Inside of it were several array, visible through windows. Command and communications. Finally, 2 array with rifles walked the perimeter of the slab. Security, such as it was.
I see about 24 array. I said to Powell.
I check your math, she said.
I want at least a couple alive.
Fine. Anyone in particular?
Let's keep the C&C staff breathing for now.
You're the boss.
You take the security in the trucks and knock out the C&C power.
Some of them will still have handhelds.
Don't give them time to use them.
You said you wanted them unharmed.
I said I wanted them breathing.
Oh, okay, Powell said. That makes things easier.
I'll take the weapons crews.
That's a lot.
I have a plan.
Yeah, what is it?
Watch this, I said. Set my MP for a particle beam and shot into one of the missiles the weapons crew was trying to install into the launcher. I aimed not for the payload, but the fuel. It went up like holiday fireworks, taking the launcher, its missiles, its crew, and the crews of the adjoining platforms with it. Everything on the slab crumpled, including any array unfortunate enough to be outside when the missile platform went up. It was a good thing we still had our masks on. They protected our ears from the blast.
I thought you might do that, Powell said out loud, breaking cover and standing up. You're not worried about them seeing you? I asked.
Lieutenant, at this point I want them to see me coming, she said, and stalked off, MP up.
I smiled, stayed crouched, and waited for any of the array on the slab to start moving again. From time to time, one would start to move away. I stopped them from continuing to do so. There was a soft thudding sound. Powell had taken out the command truck's power source. I saw her stalk across the slab toward the truck, shooting truck drivers as she went. Behind her, one of the array truck drivers had grabbed a weapon and was maneuvering around its truck to get a shot. I dealt with it.
You missed one, I sent back to her.
I knew he was there, she sent back. I knew you were there, too.
An array appeared out the door of the command truck's cabin. Powell shot it in the leg. It went down squawking.
Keep a couple alive, I said.
That depends on them, Powell sent back. She reached the truck, grabbed the squawking array, and pushed it in front of her as she went through the cabin door. Things were quiet, at least from my point of view, for a couple of minutes afterward.
I left a couple alive, Powell said, after those couple of minutes had passed. But you might want to hurry.
I hurried down. The inside of the command truck was a mess. There were 3 dead array in it, including the one Powell had shot in the leg. 2 more array were at the back of the cabin, keening.
From what little I knew of Arrayi physiology, they were both sporting broken limbs. Powell had stripped them of their personal electronics. The rest of the cabin's electronics were down. Light in the cabin consisted of a couple of small emergency lights. "Any trouble?" I asked Powell as she entered. "No," she said. "They're not very good at close quarters." "Well, that's something," I said. Powell nodded and pointed to one of the survivors.
"I think that's the one in charge," she said. "At least that's the one everyone tried to keep me from getting at."
I went over to the Arrayi, who was looking up at me. I accessed my brain pal, which had translation modules for the couple hundred species we humans had encountered the most often. The Arrayi were in there. Their language contained sounds that we can't make, but the brain pal would pick words that suited our mouths and throats. I'd tell the brain pal what I wanted to say, and it would offer me a suitable translation.
"Are you in charge here?"
I asked the Arrayi Powell had pointed out to me.
"I will not answer your questions," the Arrayi said to me, in its language, which my brain pal translated for me.
"I could break something else," Powell said.
She was listening in. "Torture isn't useful to get information," I said.
"I didn't say anything about getting information."
I looked back to her. "Give me a minute here, please," I said. Powell snorted. I turned back to the Arrayi. "You are hurt," I said in its language. "Let us help you get better."
"We're hurt because of that animal over there," the Arrayi said, jerking its head to Powell.
"You are hurt because you attacked us," I said. "You cannot attack us and expect nothing to happen in return."
The creature said nothing to this. "You are here on a planet you should not be," I said. "Helping humans, which you should not do. You need to tell me why."
"I will not."
"We can help you."
"We will help you and your soldier here," I said, pointing to the other injured Arrayi. "You will not survive if you do not get help."
"I will gladly die."
"But will you ask this soldier to die too?" I said. "Have you asked this soldier what it wants?"
"You're doing that thing where you're trying to be nice to someone you were just trying to kill," Powell said. "It doesn't work, because they remember you were trying to kill them 5 minutes ago."
"Ilsa,
I'm just pointing this out. Someone needs to say it."
I ignored her and turned back to the Arrayi. "I am Lieutenant Heather Lee of the Colonial Defense Forces," I said. "I promise you that from this point forward you will not be harmed. It's a promise whether you help me or not. But if you help me, then I may say to my superiors that you have been useful, and they will treat you better."
"We know how you treat your prisoners," the Arrayi said.
"And we know how you treat yours," I said. "We can change things now."
"Kill me and get it over with," the Arrayi said.
"I don't want to die," said the other Arrayi.
The first Arrayi squawked something at his underling, which my brain pal translated as,
"Silence! You are making a shameful utterance!"
"You won't," I said, turning my attention to it. "Help me, soldier. Help me, and you will live. I promise you."
"I am Specialist Ketrin Saylau," it said.
It motioned with its head to the other Arrayi.
"This is Commander Frui Kotvan. We are here on behalf of Equilibrium. We are here because the government of Khartoum has struck a deal with us."
"What's the deal?"
"Protection," it said. "Once the Colonial Union falls, Equilibrium will protect it from species who will try to raid or take over."
"In exchange for what?"
Commander Tivan squawked again and tried to strike Lau. Powell crossed the distance between the two and held her MP on Tivan.
"In exchange for what?" I repeated.
"You won't kill us," Lau asked. "You promise?"
"Yes, I promise. Neither of you."
"You won't torture us?"
"We won't. We're going to help you. I promise, Specialist Lau."
"Protection in exchange for laying a trap," Lau said. "For luring you here."
"That doesn't make sense," Powell said. "The Colonial Union only sent one ship. Even if the Turbingen is destroyed, we'll just send more, a lot more. This uprising will fail, and then we'll go after the Araei for helping them.
Unless there's more to it, I said, and turned back to Lao.
What else is there?
I don't know, Lao said. I'm a specialist. They only told me what I had to know for my part.
I turned to Tivon.
And I don't expect you want to fill me in.
Tivon turned its head from me.
So we have a dead end here, Powell said.
No, I said, and then cut off as the Turbingen opened a feed, searching for us. It had been attacked and damaged, but had survived, and with the help of another ship had destroyed the two ships attacking it. It was now asking for status reports.
Well, at least we're not entirely screwed, Powell said.
Call it in, I said to her. Let them know we need immediate medical evac for two Araei prisoners of war. Tell them I've promised they won't be further harmed.
That's going to go over well.
Just do it.
Anything else?
Tell them to send another shuttle for the two of us. We have another mission to finish. On the way back, our shuttle was diverted from the Turbingen to the other Colonial Union ship.
I haven't heard of the Chandler before, Powell said.
It's a State Department ship, not a CDF ship, I said.
A State Department ship with a fully operational offensive weapons system.
Times have changed, I said.
These constraints are hurting my arms, said Masahiko Okada, the now former Prime Minister of Khartoum.
It's possible that he might still be considered the Prime Minister by some, but from a practical matter, his days in charge of things were now over.
I'm very uncomfortable.
And several of my friends are dead, Powell said to Okada. So maybe you should think you're getting the better end of the deal and shut up.
Okada turned to me.
If you don't think people will know about how you're treating me...
Let me throw him out, Powell said to me.
Okada turned back to Powell.
What?
Let me throw him out, Powell repeated to me. This shitbucket is the reason Lambert and Salcedo are dead, not to mention everyone else in the platoon.
Not everyone else is dead, I reminded her. Gould and Deconic survived, too.
Gould and Deconic are both in critical condition, Powell said. They might survive. And if they don't, that leaves just you and me out of an entire fucking platoon.
She jabbed a finger at Okada.
I think that rates him getting a spacewalk without a suit.
I turned to Okada. Your thoughts, Mr. Prime Minister?
It's the Colonial Union that instigated this rebellion, not the government of Khartoum, Okada began.
Oh, that is it, Powell interrupted and stood up. Time for you to breathe some vacuum, motherfucker.
Okada visibly shrunk away from Powell. I held up a hand. Powell stopped advancing on Okada. New plan, I said. I pointed to Okada.
You don't say another single word until after we dock with the Chandler.
I glanced back to Powell.
And you don't toss him into space.
Okada said nothing more, even after we had landed and some of the Chandler's crew took him away.
He seems quiet,
the Chandler crew member who approached me said, nodding over to Okada. Unlike all the others, he was green, which meant he was CDF.
He was sufficiently motivated, I said.
It appears so, he said. Now then, do you remember me, Lieutenant Lee?
I do, Lieutenant Wilson, I said.
I motioned to Powell. This is my Sergeant Ilsa Powell.
Sergeant,
Wilson said, and turned his attention back to me.
I'm glad you remember me. I'm supposed to debrief you and catch you up with things.
What we'd really like to do is get back to the Turbingen, I said.
Well, Wilson said, about that.
What is it?
Maybe we should find some place to sit down and chat.
Maybe you should just tell me right now because otherwise I might punch you, Wilson.
He smiled.
You definitely haven't changed. All right, here it is. The Turbingen survived the attack on her, but survive is a relative term. She's essentially dead in orbit. She might have been entirely destroyed, but we managed to get here in time and help her fight off the ships attacking her.
And how did you do that? I asked. Arrive in the nick of time.
We had a hunch, Wilson said. And that's all I can say about that right now, here, out in the open, in a shuttle bay.
Hmm.
My point is,
that if you really want to head back to the Turbingen, you may after we are done debriefing, but you won't be staying there. At best, you'll have time to collect any personal belongings that weren't destroyed in the battle before the John Henry and other ships arrived to take you and all the other survivors of the Turbingen back to Phoenix Station for reassignment. You might as well stay here. We can have your effects brought to you.
How many people died in the attack on the Turbingen?
Powell asked.
215 dead, another several dozen injured. That's not counting your platoon. Sorry about that. We've retrieved them, by the way.
Where are they? I asked.
They're in one of the mess coolers at the moment.
I'd like to see them.
I don't recommend that. It's not very dignified. How they are being stored, I mean.
I don't care.
I'll have it arranged, then.
I also want to know about the two Aurei I sent back.
They're in our brig, and receiving medical attention, in as much as we can give it to them, Wilson said. Their injuries were substantial, but thankfully not terribly complicated. Mostly broken bones, which we could set and tend. Which one of you did that, by the way?
That would be me, Powell said.
You're fun, Wilson said.
You should see me on the second date.
Wilson smiled at this and turned his attention back to me.
We received your instruction that they were not to be further harmed. That was not a problem because we had no intention of doing so. You do understand we will need to question them.
You can question them without harming them, I said.
Yes, we can, Wilson said. I just want you to be clear that the questioning is likely to be aggressive, even if it's not physical, particularly of Commander Teevon, who is interesting to us for other reasons than just his involvement here.
Who's going to do the questioning?
Well, here it's going to be me.
Commander Teevon doesn't seem very forthcoming.
Don't worry. I think I can get him to talk without breaking anything else in his body. I've worked with Aurei before. Trust me.
All right, thank you, I said. I nodded in the direction of where Okada went. What's going to happen with him?
Him I'm not going to make too many promises about, Wilson said. He's managed to perform a neat little trick. Not only has he betrayed the Colonial Union, he's also betrayed his own rebellion.
How do you mean?
I mean that there were 10 Colonial Union planets that were supposed to announce their independence from the CU simultaneously, and that Khartoum was one of them. But Khartoum jumped the gun, announced early, and then lured the Turbingen into a trap.
Why would they do that?
That's what we need to find out, Wilson said. What he tells us is going to make a difference in how the Colonial Union as a whole deals with these rebellious planets.
Do you think he'll talk? Powell asked.
By the time we get done with him, getting him to talk won't be the problem. It'll be getting him to shut up. Now, are you ready for the formal debriefing?
Actually, I would like to see my soldiers first, I said.
All right, Wilson said.
I found Lambert, waist high in a stack of dead bodies near the back of the mess cooler. Salcido I found two stacks over, closer to the floor. They did not bear close observation.
Lambert was right, you know, Powell said.
She was with me in the cooler. Wilson had walked us to the cooler, opened it, and then waited outside. The cooler had been cleared of shelves and the contents they usually stored. The latter were either restocked in a different cooler or being fed to the survivors of the Turbingen, who were in the mess itself, unhappily crowded together. At least they weren't crowded together in here.
What was he right about? I asked.
Root causes, Powell said. You, of all people, I said, almost smiling.
I didn't ever say he was wrong. I said who cares.
But now you do care.
I care more than I used to.
What are we doing here, Lieutenant?
We're running around putting out fires. And fine, we're the fire brigade. Our job is putting out the fires. Not worrying about how they got started, just putting them out. But at some point, even the fire brigade has to start asking who is starting all these fires and why it's being left to us to continually put them out.
Lambert would be laughing his head off to hear you say that.
If he were here to laugh his head off, I wouldn't be saying it. He'd be saying it again.
Powell motioned to where Salcido was.
And Sal would be geeking out over some point of trivia, and I would be sniping at both of them, and you would be playing referee, and we would all be one happy family again instead of the two of us looking at the two of them in a meat locker.
You've lost friends before, I said.
Of course I have, Powell said. And so have you. It doesn't make it any easier when it happens.
We were silent for a moment. I have a speech running through my head, I finally said to Powell. One you were going to make? Powell asked. No, one someone else made, that I've been thinking a lot about the last few weeks, when we've been running around putting out fires.
Which one is it?
It's the Gettysburg Address. Abraham Lincoln, you remember it? Powell smirked.
I lived in America and taught in a junior high. I remember it.
It's something like 300 words long, and it wasn't even well received when Lincoln gave it. The part I'm thinking about is where he says, "Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure."
Powell nodded. You think we are in a civil war right now?
I don't know what we're in right now, I said. It doesn't feel like a real war. It's too strung out, too diffuse. It's not battlefield after battlefield, it's skirmish after skirmish.
Let me clear it up for you, Powell said. It's a civil war. We lost the Earth. The Colonial Union only has so long before it has to turn to all the colonies to support it with the things it used to get for free from the Earth. The colonies are asking if what they get from the Colonial Union is worth the cost, and worth the cost of having the Colonial Union keep running things. Sounds like the answer for at least some of them is no. And it seems like now they think the arm the Colonial Union was using to shield them is now up against their throat, so they're trying to get out before the whole thing falls down around them.
They're not doing a good job of it, I said.
They don't have to do a good job of it for it to be a civil war, and they're not doing a good job of it so far.
Powell motioned around her.
But it looks like they're learning, and it looks like they're getting allies with this Equilibrium group.
I don't think Equilibrium, whoever they are doing this out of the goodness of their own heart.
You're not wrong about that, but it doesn't matter from the point of view of this being a civil war. If they don't think the Colonial Union has their interests at heart, then it's a case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
That's not a very smart strategy.
Smart has nothing to do with this.
We could go around and around like this for hours, Lieutenant. What do you think? I said.
About what?
About the Colonial Union, I said. About it controlling these planets, about how it responds to things like this. I waved my hand around the room. About all of this. Powell looked vaguely surprised.
The Colonial Union's a fascistic shit show, boss. I knew that much from the first day I set foot on one of their boats to get away from Earth. Are you kidding? They control trade. They control communications. They don't let the colonies protect themselves, and they don't let them do anything that doesn't go through the Colonial Union itself. And let's not forget everything they've done to Earth. They've been doing it for centuries. Shit, Lieutenant. I'm not surprised we have a civil war on our hands right now. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner.
And yet here we are, I said. You and me in their uniform.
We didn't want to die old, Powell said. I was 75 and I spent most of my whole life in Florida and I had bone cancer and never did the things I wanted to do and it was eating me up.
You think I'm an asshole now? You should have seen me just before I left Earth.
You would have pushed me off a building just on principle, and you wouldn't have been wrong to do it.
Well, all right, I said. We didn't know coming out here what we'd be getting ourselves into.
No, we didn't.
But now you do know, I said. And if you knew then what you knew now, would you still do it?
Yes, Powell said. I still don't want to die old.
But you just said the Colonial Union is a fascistic shit show.
It is. And right now it's the only way we survive, Powell said. Look around. Look at the planets we've been on. Look at all the species out there we've had to fight. Do you really think any of these planets and the people on them won't get carved up the first minute the Colonial Union disappears? They've never fought before. Not on the scale they would need to. They have no military infrastructure on the scale they'd have to have, and they would have no time to ramp any of that up. The Colonial Union is a monster, but the colonies are fucking baby deer in a forest full of predators.
Then how does any of that change?
Got me, boss. I just work here. What I do know is that it is going to change. It has to change, because we don't have the Earth anymore. The mechanics of the Colonial Union, what it was founded on, just don't work anymore. It changes or we all die, and I'm doing my part to keep it together until then. The alternative is grim.
I suppose it might be, I said.
What about you? Would you do it again, Lieutenant?
I don't know, I said. I don't want to die old, you're right.
I reached out and touched Lambert's cold arm. But there are worse ways to go.
He went mid-pontification, Powell said. I'm pretty sure that's how he would have wanted to go.
I laughed at that.
Fair enough, I said. I think my point is that I get it now. I get that there are worse things than to have lived a life and have most of it behind you. I wouldn't be afraid of that anymore, I think.
Maybe. It's easy to say that now that you look 20 years old and will live for another 60 even if you left the CDF today.
Again, a fair point.
This is why I told Lambert to stop going on about it, you know? Powell said. All the thinking about the steps beyond what we were directly doing, it never makes you happy. It never solves anything for you right now.
I smiled. And yet you were the one to bring it up. Here. Now.
Yes, well,
Powell grimaced.
Think of it as a tribute. To our departed friend. I'll never do it again.
I motioned to Salcido. And him?
Shit, I don't know, Powell said. Maybe listen to that stupid Pizza Moon song again? Or think about what day it is in the mess? Which is complete bullshit, by the way. You can get pizza and tacos and hamburgers any day you want. It's just which entree they push out in front.
I know, I said. But that wasn't the point of the conversation, was it?
No, Powell said. No, it wasn't.